If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I think that's the main thing. It's like, how can I focus on generating revenue, and then how can I find good people to do most of the other work?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
John started Kunst in 2014. Kunst is a real estate developer in Cincinnati, Ohio, which focuses on cool city apartments and use of multiple tax incentives. They have used more than $8 million in historic tax credits. Kunst has worked with more than 20 investors with $2 million in capital raised, and will have 100 apartments by the end of 2021. John believes in cities, dense development, historic preservation, good design, and great customer service for renters and investors. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's great. It's great to have you on. I'm excited to dig into you and your business today and just learn more about what you guys do. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, if you can briefly tell us, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So I'm from upstate New York, but I went to grad school in Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati. So got an MBA, graduated 2012. I work for basically a small software company here, and kind of on the side bought the first building. So it was $5,000, three apartments. You know, this is 2014. So prices have gone up since then, but you know, it was a rough area then. It's a rough area still, honestly. And you know, the building needed a lot of work. So it kind of started as a side project, kind of like friends and family, small investors, like average of like $5,000, 12 people. So total of 60 grand, that was basically the first building. So it's three apartments, you know, I was making money on the rent, but a couple of years later we sold it. So yeah, so basically started on the side, and then kind of, you know, investment checks got bigger. We got kind of more units. So now we'll be at about 100 units by the end of this year. We have like effectively 25 that are done in renting, another kind of 60 that are like under construction, and then a few more to start. So
that's great, man. That's great. And what inspired you to get into real estate back in 2014?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it was probably in my heart and mind for a long time. You know, I like buildings, I like architecture. Our model is really like historic preservation in cities using tax incentives. And so the opportunity kind of came up. It's like, oh, there's a building for $5,000. It's really cool looking. The neighborhood is cool. That's really kind of how it started. And then, you know, obviously it wasn't painful enough to stop, so we continued. But yeah, that was basically it. And now, you know, obviously I've learned a lot of terms and how all this stuff works and the financing and tax credits, you know, like anything, just kind of figuring out as we go and making a lot of mistakes and, you know, experts by fire, I guess.
Right. No, that's it. I always say that action leads to understanding. So, you know, experts by fire, it's another way of saying that. I like that. So talk to us. You bring up an interesting thing that I'll just hear for everybody listening, admit I know nothing about, and that's tax credits.
Right.
I've heard of it, but I just have no real world understanding of how that works. So what does that mean? Can you unpack that in detail for us?
Yeah. So I would say with all these tax credits, it's essentially like the state or federal or local government trying to incentivize a certain thing. So like, if you do this certain thing, we'll give you a tax break. I mean, that's really all it is. But the one we use the most, for example, is the historic tax credits. And so there's a federal program, there's a state program, and there might even be local programs depending where you are. But, you know, in our case, effectively 45% of a project cost, so to renovate a historic building, will then come out as a tax credit. So it can be used to like pay less tax, or it can be used as like a tax refund. But yeah, effectively 45% of the cost is then you know, applied as a state or federal tax credit. And really, so there's an application that can be quite annoying. For the historic tax credit, you're effectively saying like, we're going to keep the original floors, we'll keep the original doors. Like, they want to know the historic preservation work specifically that you're going to do. And if you do all that, then you get a tax credit. So effectively, they're recognizing it's expensive, it's annoying, it's hard to do a really good historic preservation job. And so they're going to give you a credit for that. And there's ones that apply to like energy efficiency. The opportunity zone, you could say, is kind of like a tax credit where, you know, if you're investing in like a poor neighborhood or a distressed area, you can get tax benefits based on that. So that's kind of all it is.
Right. Which is fine. I mean, a tax, let me see if I understand this correctly. A tax credit is okay as long as there's other income to offset. Like, I don't care if you had, you know, let's say you had $100,000 that were expenses and they offset $45,000 to use your 45%, right? So now you got a $45,000 tax credit.
Yeah.
But let's say your income that year, I'm just making up numbers here, but say your income was 30 grand that year, like,
you're not going to be able to use that.
Yeah. I mean, it does you a good on the first 30, but then you have still 15 remaining in tax credit, which I guess that's helpful. That's interesting.
It's a great point. So, you know, in my case, like, we're having tax credits, you know, beyond what I could use, you know, I'm not that rich, but, in the state of Ohio, it's great because you get it as a tax refund. So like, if you can't use the credit, then it becomes a tax refund. So it's, you know, nowadays direct deposit. So you finish the project, you do everything you said you were going to do, you're going to get a direct deposit from the state government for, you know, a big part of the project. So that's pretty sweet.
Now that's a different story. That's
in Ohio. That, I think that varies state by state if it's refundable. I mean, that's kind of the term, like, is it refundable or not? In Ohio it is. And that, I don't know how many states it applies to, but certainly not all of them.
That seems like a no-brainer. So you put 100 grand into a project, you get 45 of your project expense back.
Yeah, it's 25% is the state and 20% is federal.
Right. I mean, that blows your returns. That just way inflates your returns, no? Or is it such that the places that generate tax credits are places that are just more difficult to generate the returns, I guess? How does that work?
Yeah, and maybe the projects themselves, like, certainly, you know, if you were just to totally demo out everything inside the building and do 100% new, you could probably do it faster and maybe cheaper. So there might be, you know, from my perspective, there might be a little incremental project cost or incremental project time, like, I would say very minimal, but then you get a 25% credit. So it's definitely worth it. But that's kind of the trade-off, is like, you're gonna have to do this application, you're gonna have to keep the floors, you're gonna have to use the original doors, you're gonna have to, you know, so like, that's annoying to a lot of people. To me, it's like what I'm interested in, and we get a big tax credit for it. So
what are the size of buildings that you're buying this and using tax credits on?
Yeah. So we started, it was three units, you know, that total renovation was like 250,000, you know, now, you know, kind of the biggest scale we're at now is like 20 units. So that'll be like a $2 million like total project. So that's kind of our scale so far, like probably averages in like the 10 to 15 unit range.
Gotcha. Walk us through kind of how that process from the first three apartments that you bought, what did scaling look like for you and how did you do it, especially with, I mean, historic renovations have got to be a different animal than, you know, just restoring something built from doing a rehab built in the 80s. What were the processes like did you have a background in building construction? Did you partner with the right people, or how did you develop the team that helps you? I mean, you said you're under 60 under construction right now, or rehab.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot of moving parts and a lot of people going a lot of places. So how did you build out this team?
Yeah. So started just kind of learning. So did a lot of physical work myself. I worked basically as a laborer for a construction company for a short period of time. So I learned a bit there. And the main thing I think I learned there was just like not to be afraid. Because, you know, you look at this brick wall and it's crumbling, you're like, oh man, what does that cost? The building's falling down. You're like, yeah, but probably a bunch of guys built that 130 years ago by hand. So like, certainly we can figure out how to do it again now with all the technology and everything we have. So yeah, so that fear kind of went away. It's like, nothing's really that scary, but yeah, the buildings are tough. They're annoying to renovate and take a lot of time. But so anyway, so the first building, you know, I did a decent amount of physical work, and that's kind of less and less with each building, just like, you know, the time available. But, you know, we do a decent amount in-house. We have like three full-time construction guys. Mm. And now we're kind of adding more, I would say, on the management side, like a, you know, part-time or full-time person to kind of manage all the finance and accounting. We're hiring somebody to kind of lead all the construction. But yeah, just kind of went building by building. You know, it's been 5 years. We started with three, second building was six, you know, third building was nine. And just like that, I guess.
One step at a time. That's really interesting. Who was the first person you hired?
The first three people were basically construction laborers, and then fourth was kind of like admin. And so we're seven now. We hired a full-time architect. So I think it's eight actually. And then, so the next hires will be basically construction management, basically like CFO or part-time CFO, you know, something like that.
No, that's cool. That's really cool. You make it sound so easy. Yeah. Those are tough steps for a lot of us as we scale to go, gosh, who do we bring on first? for you, it just kind of happened as the deals came to you. Well, I guess talk to us about deal flow. Like, what does that look like for you as you guys go out? I mean, are these types of deals, are they ones that are you fighting over these, or is it that there's just lots of this inventory available in Cincinnati and it's an easy process for you?
Yeah, I think we've been fortunate in that sense, kind of what we were talking about. Like, it's not the easiest thing and it takes a lot of time. And, you know, I think for better or worse, a lot of the interest in real estate is like the very quick, which might be like, how do we do a 2-month flip? How do we do what we saw on HGTV? How do we, you know, like flip this house? And so, you know, maybe that's where a lot of the market is. And then on all the way up from like, oh, it's an 80s renovation, you have to do some light touch on it, but it's not like a full haul. And what we're doing is like, this is, you know, probably 2 years from the point we buy it to the point that's renting out, including like over a year of construction. And obviously we're trying to make that faster, but you know, it's a lot of pain. It's a lot of time. So there is competition, but we're kind of have found, I think, a pretty narrow niche. You know, we're in Cincinnati, Ohio, we're doing historic projects and historic tax credits. So it's kind of a high level of pain, which means maybe a little less competition.
Right. And so how many, you said you're at a team of like 8 or 9 right now?
Yeah, 8.
Right. So how many of these people, I mean, I can only imagine on 60 rehabs that you, I mean, there's a lot of detail and a lot of minutia in those, like, hey, what do we do with this? I mean, rehabs are, I would say 10 times more complex than just a new build. And I would say even beyond that, much, much more harder in a historic renovation, right? So who is it that are the boots on the ground making job level decisions for you? How have you offloaded that and not made that a constant dripping faucet? Like, hey, John, what about?
I would say even honestly in the last 6 months, like, you know, we've picked up a lot more on the construction side and so are now hiring more. So, you know, we're hiring, you know, full-time basically like head of construction, you know, up until end of December, that was me.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just different sites where, you know, we're basically managing like 4 different sites right now. And so we've had to grow. And I think that's part of it too. Like, you know, it's hard to foresee who you need to hire, or it's hard to know when it's the right time. But, you know, for me, it's always like, well, I'm at the edge of like pain or efficiency or like what can really run well. And once you're like pushing that edge and feeling like, okay, things are starting to fall, it's like, all right, there's definitely time to hire, if not sooner. So.
Yeah, that's a cool metric, I guess, or our gut feeling probably to run by is like, wait, things are starting to fail and I'm the point of that failure.
Yeah. And put aside some ego of like, you know, I can't and I shouldn't necessarily be managing that much construction. So, you know, you find skilled people that are maybe better.
Sure. Talk to us about funding these deals. What's one of the strategies? I know you said out of the gate, you guys were kind of, you know, beg, borrow and stealing from, you know, family members, $5,000 at a time. But now if you've got several $1 million in rehabs going at once, how do you fund those?
Yeah. So that's scaled up as well, I guess. So yeah, first was like 12 people, average of $5,000. Kind of the second and third projects were like, I'd say local successful people that could invest like $50,000 each. So each project might be like 100, 200,000. And then, you know, kind of bigger investors, even outside of the local area, you know, potentially some in New York or on the coast, something like that, where they can invest, you know, maybe 200, 300,000. So that's kind of the scale we're at now. You know, we are raising our second fund. So it'll be a $10 million fund. So, you know, the minimum is 50,000, but we expect maybe, you know, the average is 100 to 500,000, something like that. So that's basically it. You know, I think there's probably a lot to learn on the fundraising side. Like, you know, don't be afraid to ask. People want to make money. They want to invest money if the projects are good. And hopefully now we've built a track record and can kind of build a network where we can kind of keep fundraising more and more.
Right. Were those conversations difficult for you out of the gate?
Yeah, maybe not difficult. You know, I think there's always some level of, you know, being naive and you just kind of ask and figure it out and probably, you know, project some confidence that at the time that was beyond what we had done. But, you know, you figure out the first project, like they, you know, I would say all investors so far have done quite well. Yeah, that's, I've just learned like it doesn't hurt to ask. And that's maybe the main thing in raising money.
How do you raise funds from people you don't know?
Yeah, so put together documentation that just shows what we've done, you know, try to talk with them, get on. I mean, obviously now with Zoom, what we're on is a great tool. You can talk to people remotely and have that face-to-face because, you know, there has to be some level of trust independent of what you've done, your track record and all that. Like, you know, I'm a real person. honest, straightforward guy, I think. So yeah, it's interesting. A lot of it is moving online, I think, in a good way. I do think you probably even have some advantage of asking people in person or calling people, not necessarily always kind of being online or emails or whatever. I think there is still some magic probably to networking as much in person as you can and talking and calling and, doing old school or something. But yeah.
Yeah. And so far that's worked out for you. So you're launching this fund. What have been some of the surprises in that as you've launched? I mean, has there been legal surprises? Has there been cost getting it started surprises? Or I guess walk us through maybe what things that you didn't expect that were, just share with us some of those if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think I'd say for how much maybe online resources, literature, like resources there are for real estate, there's not that much around sort of like, I would say, real estate, private equity. How do you raise funds? What's the structure of it? What are the legal documents you need? So, my bias always is like, how can I figure this out myself? Like, certainly you could pay, and I talked to a lawyer today, like you could pay someone 50 grand to help you set up this fund.
Sure.
And maybe that makes sense. Maybe that's interesting. I'm always like, well, how do you, make sure everything's covered, but do it for like 5 grand, and appreciating like now you're selling security, like you have to be very careful. You have to be, sure things are right and proper and you're being fair to everyone, but it applies to construction too. Like you could hire the $200,000 plumbing company and stuff would probably go well, but maybe the $125,000 plumbing company would also do a really good job. So I think that applies. So that's, that's what I'm working through is like, how is it structured? How do you make sure you don't run afoul of SEC? How do you, make sure it's set up in the right way? What's really required? What's sort of like recommended? What's not really needed? But yeah, it's interesting too. Like once you put the call out there, get in, some news articles, podcasts like this, it's interesting who reaches out and who's interested and people you can meet even now on social media. Like I started Twitter earlier this month and we'll see if that's useful, but so far I have some interesting stuff from there too. So yeah.
That's a lot of moving pieces for you. I would imagine you've got capital raise, you're building a fund and trying to not DIY it, but you're trying to do it without paying the $50,000 out to whoever it is that you need to pay that out to. And then you've got your construction, then you've got hiring, and then you've got projects in flow and tax credits and everything to deal with. That's a lot of moving pieces. I'm impressed that you've retained your flock of hair. You can see what stress did. Yeah, stress did to me. It all fell out. So good job. Yeah. Can you give us some keys to managing all of these different moving pieces? What are some things you've employed that have helped you kind of keep the ship afloat?
Yeah, there's, I would say it's funny again with Twitter. Like I would say generally I'm not like a social media person, but it has been useful. And there are a few people on there, which I think have really interesting viewpoints. And I think one important one, which I've probably taken on more in the last 6 months, honestly, is like, my time is best spent on basically like generating revenue, whatever that looks like. If it's construction and we have general contractor fees and, there's that. Now there's raising a fund, which is going to bring in new investors and, more income for us. So I try to focus as much of my time basically on generating revenue. And then, how do I hire like good people to effectively do everything else? And I think for me, and maybe it's men or it's real estate or something, it's like, I think you have some ego and you're like, oh, I don't care. I'll go do the masonry. I'll go turn the apartment. I'll go do whatever. I think you have some, like, you're willing to get in the mud, which is good, but it's also like, well, that's not really making you that much money, and maybe you're not the best person to be doing that. And maybe you'd be better served by finding a way to manage and make sure other people do a good job with it. So I think that's the main thing. It's like, how can I focus on generating revenue? And then how can I find good people to do most of the other work?
Right, right. No, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I want to ask, this is the question I couldn't remember earlier. And this goes back to your, and we're going to kind of shift gears here. So I apologize, but go back to buy and hold. Is everything you guys do buy and hold?
Yeah. I think it always depends on the investors, what their will is, the individual project. I think my dream scenario would be to hold these buildings forever.
That's cool.
Yeah. We buy them, we put in tons of energy. We add a lot of value. We get the tax credits, which help get a lot of that initial capital out. So, we de-risk it in some sense. We get that capital out. And then I think you can refinance hopefully every couple of years and get a lot of the money out. And so, I think they're good assets. They're in cities. I think they're going to keep gaining value probably forever. And so we sold the first building we did, and certainly we would do it again, but only probably if we have to or if it really makes sense or something.
Right, right. No, that's very cool. That's very cool. John, let's jump into the final four here. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
To start, I mean, people say that all the time, but I do think that's true. Like the first building, I had absolutely no clue what I was doing and figured it out and went through a lot of pain, including the tax credit application, including filing for permits, including construction itself, like financing, loans, all that stuff. You just like, I have no idea. I have no clue. And you go into it like an open mind, and you learn, and that's like the only way you learn, I think.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, that's it. There's unfortunately for a lot of these, especially when you're dealing with the government, there's no book. There's no process manual for how to file a permit and what order your inspections are in. It's just, you just keep calling code enforcement until they're like, oh yeah, this is your order. Okay, thanks. Right. Good for you.
Yeah. And it's good to look dumb of like, I don't know what that word is. I don't, you know, oh, fire, like whatever, rough inspection and permit. Like what does that mean?
Absolutely. <don't know. laughs> Absolutely. And at least here in Tennessee, you know, you can pull all your own permits on your own building, be your own GC. And so you can play dumb. It's just, Hey, I'm so sorry. I don't know. Can you walk that? Tell me how that works again. Okay. So what do I do next? And you generally find that the guys who were, or gals who were on the other end of the line that were previously unhelpful and rude before, like, oh wait, I'm dealing with an idiot. Okay, sure. I'll have a little bit more patience. So maybe you're not the idiot, but I certainly am when I'm on those phone calls. So
no, I agree.
That's great. What's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I think trying to get more systems in place, especially I think with technology, we've added this software or website basically called Roger to process payments. I mean, that alone is like so many invoices, so many things to pay. So having a system set up for that, you know, how do you manage punch out? How do you manage all the tasks? Like, you know, we use basically an app for that. And, you know, you can hire to a certain degree, but also like you can hopefully avoid a lot of pain just with like good systems and good software nowadays.
That's great. Yeah, that's absolutely a good point. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Yeah, I think, you know, my interests are probably really two things. It's like small business and probably historic preservation. You know, we started a historic preservation nonprofit in 2014. And certainly as I have the means, like that's going to be more of my interest. I wish, honestly, I could have done more all through COVID. Like I see small businesses and they're shutting down or they're really struggling. It's like, you know, certainly the reason I want to be wealthy is that I could, you know, help people out.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, John, how do they find you?
Yeah. The website, kunst.us, KUNST.US, like United States. And that's my email as well. John@kunst.US is probably the best email. You know, I don't mind people call, you know, my phone number's on the website. As I said, I'm newly on Twitter. So for all the Twitter people out there, that's an option, but I think best is emails. Yeah.
That's awesome. John, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.